The opinions you love. The history you crave. This is Rant EM Radio.
Archie versus zombies, Romeo and Juliet in the hood, Barack Obama versus the aliens. We're talking indie comics and pop culture. All this and a whole lot more on this premiere episode of Epic. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Lee, joined by the Silver Surfer.
Hey,
Silver,
how you doing? Surfer.
What's going on? How you feeling?
I'm doing good. You know, here to help support my brother in comic books in his inaugural show.
It is very much appreciated, sir.
Well, that's what I'm here for, you know.
Well, that's good. That's good. Let me ask you, I know we you read, we listen to you on, what are you reading on your podcast? So we know you pretty much a really huge Marvel fan, and you know, I guess you're reading some DC. I know you said you read Saga. Do you read any comics, or are there any indie comics that you read before?
Yes. Well, okay. Even though I'll go towards Marvel easy, it's a thing where the price of comic books these days is just so much. I can't keep up with everything. I mean, I would love to have a job where all I did was read every book that came out, you know, in a week, and
you and me both
discuss it, you know, and you know, I didn't have to go out of pocket for it. You know, $4 a pop can be draining, but over the years, you know, I gravitate to different indie books. Right now, Saga was the one that caught me. Everybody loved Brian K. Vaughan so much, and you know, so I just started reading it, and so I've been one of those ones that kept up on it. I'm reading The Star Wars. I don't know if that's considered an indie book or not, but
I still yeah, I see what you mean.
I haven't read the second book yet, but I am going to start stepping up some Dark Horse soon, so.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I know what you mean as far as, like, just the price of comics. You know, years ago, I mean, you know this well. I mean, you could walk into a comic shop with, and I know this is probably about 20 years ago or more, but you could walk into a comic shop with a $20 bill and walk out with a stack of comics.
Yeah, well, listen. If books were $2, I would spend 2-3 times as much as I'm spending now.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I had an addiction at one time. I would blow half a paycheck in the store, like, in one day. Like,
that's an addiction. Yes, it is.
Cards and books and...
Well, I didn't say. See, I was in high school when I started collecting. I was in elementary school. I was in fifth grade when I started collecting, and you know, from there, I remember I would save lunch money. I would not eat lunch.
I know those days.
Yeah, I would save lunch money, and I would take any allowance I got. And back in when I was coming up, it was a treat to go to a comic shop. You know, comics came from 7-Eleven. They came from Rite Aid. They came from anything local that had a little spinner rack. And you know, you grab what you wanted. They were 75 cents, and it was just like you grab a stack of books and you were in heaven.
Well, let me tell you my little journey to mystery. You know, I came across my first comic book store coming from a Saturday art class, right? And you know, I demanded my mother take me inside, and I won't even mention the store because I hate going in there and I don't go in there, but I got lucky enough that when I was in junior high school, a store opened up near my high school, and you know, this was when books was 40 cents a pop, 35, 40 cents.
You're aging yourself, sir.
I know.
40 cents.
Oh, yeah.
When I started, they were 65, so 40.
I remember when they went up to 50, I was like, man, how can I afford this? But
well, let me ask you this: when I started collecting, I know that some of the comics that may have been on maybe better quality paper or were more popular may have been like a quarter more. Did they have that back when they were 40 cents?
No, everything was on newsprint. They didn't start using better paper until like the '80s, when books like Dark Knight Return and Watchmen and stuff started coming out.
Gotcha. Because by the time I got on the scene, you know, they had those comics that you could only get at comic. Well, there was a lot that you could only get at comic shops, but it was you know, there were certain ones that were, you know, the card stock or the covers may have been thicker, or there was something to it. Now, you remember Heavy Metal magazine?
Oh yeah.
So it was like on that side you had Heavy Metal, you had Conan, you had you know, your magazines, but then you had those, I guess, deluxe issues that were, I think New Teen Titans or Teen Titans was like that when they had did that in the '80s. I'm guessing, I can't remember quite, but I know that was a popular book. And if I go back through some of my comics I have from the '80s, because I did save some, you know, some of the prices, you know, they were a little bit more. So you had a book that may have been a dollar, but another one was $1.50 or $1.25. I think Punisher War Journal was more than Punisher or something like that. And, mm-hmm. You know, so. But so you were saying that you went in and you got you went into the comic store, and what happened when you went in? What did you see?
The book that hold dears to my heart.
I make a guess?
Yes.
Was it a Silver Surfer book?
No. At the time, he wasn't being printed.
Okay.
It was Micronauts number one.
I remember Micronauts.
I walked in and saw, right next to each other, Micronauts, Shogun Warriors, and like a month or two later, ROM Space Knight came out.
Where the hell is ROM? Shouldn't he be in the? I don't want to go. We're gonna say that for your show. We're talking indie comics, but I'm with you, ROM. I remember ROM, and you would think that he. I would like to see him pop up.
It's rights.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay.
You know, that was a toy, and you know, you gotta have the rights to him, and the company that used to print them don't have the rights to him. So.
So is it kind of like with Turtles and like with He-Man and.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a licensed property, pretty much, that you can find pop up, kind of like Star Wars was old.
Yeah, Ron was specifically made to sell a toy.
Okay, like He-Man was for the cartoon. So I got you. Okay. Okay.
Well, so was Shogun Warriors and Micronauts, but like,
but would you agree that Ron maybe became more important to Marvel Comics fans than?
Micronauts?
I mean, like, do you hear anybody asking for Micronauts today? I hear people asking for ROM.
Yes, Micronauts still have a fine place in people's hearts. And those first 12 issues of Micronauts is one of the best runs you'll ever read in comic books.
Got you. Now, do you remember? You remember who the creative team was?
For which ones?
Well, the only thing I remember about Micronauts, because I can't remember, I remember they had a crossover with the X-Men.
Yes, of course, because they were the two hottest properties.
And I remember back then, you know, I remember Teen Titans had a crossover with the X-Men, and Micronauts had a crossover with the X-Men. I remember that, you know, and I was like, they must be a big deal, because X-Men were, you know, a big deal back then. And I read the issues. I can't say I don't even know how many issues they had or how long they were out, but I read quite a few issues of Micronauts. That I did, you know, that I did get from that was just kind of passed down, or I may have gotten from the comic store. Now they were out. What was it, like early 80s? I've read them probably in the
first issue is cover date January 79.
Bill, I know I've read them in the 80s, probably like 87, 88. I probably read it this year.
Excuse me. It's Bill Mattalia, I can't pronounce his name, and Michael Golden. They're the ones that did the original 12 issue run, the book.
Okay. So anyway, so you went to, you saw this comic, and that's what started you on your comics journey?
Well, I read comics before that, but that was the ones you got at the corner store, and you get them in a pack. You get like five random comics for like a dime.
And you know they still do that. Like Five Below has like packs. I mean, it's not a dime, obviously. It's probably like $3 or $4, but.
And it was missing covers. And
oh, they wanted to go that far, but okay.
Well,
you didn't care.
No, newsstands. Like when they couldn't sell books, they would give them back or sell them back to the publisher. The publisher would cut half the cover off and then package them up in them in those multi packs, and then you get them at the corner store.
Ah, I got you. Okay.
But since there's no newsstand comics anymore, you don't get that really.
Okay. Well, mine started in the 7-Eleven. I was coming home from school, and I've told this story before, and I'm pretty sure you guys will, you'll hear this again on another podcast that I did. But yeah, I was walking home from school and stopped in the 7-Eleven, and I was about to pay for my candy. I think it was like a Jolly Rancher, and my eyes went over to the rack, and I saw a comic and put the candy back. And I asked my mother, I was like, can I get this? Instead of the candy, that was my pitch. It was 75 cents, and I got it, and that was history. I mean, you know what? No matter how many times people talk a lot of times about, I was able to step away from professional wrestling, you know, when I wasn't happy with certain things or whatever, and leave for a great deal of time. And then, you know, I'll come back, but, you know, I was able to attach a little easier. With comics, I cannot stay away. Comics are a huge part of my upbringing, moving from school to school, you know, those comic characters were always there. They definitely helped growing up with my vocabulary, because if I didn't understand a word, it was like, you know, you look it up, you found out what it meant. And comics, they don't always use, you know, it's not always Batman, you know, 1966 television show where it's, you know, holy this Batman. Nah, comics can get deep. And that said, for those that don't read comics, if you read a comic 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, some of the stuff you'll find today, these stories that you'll read, amazing stuff. So, but I mean, my focus is on indie comics. And
so why do you gravitate towards the indies more than, say, mainstream?
I was just about to say, growing up, I don't know why Surfer was, but as a child, it was always, which one is better, Marvel or DC? And this is something that children, I think, we just kind of created. You know,
that's the eternal question. You know, Coke or Pepsi?
Exactly. That was one of them, Marvel or DC. And it was like, there was never a question of trying anything else. It was Marvel or DC. And I liked Marvel comics. I love Marvel comics. I was fascinated with Spider-Man. Fascinated. I mean, any Spider-Man comic I could get my hand on. Then from there, I went to X-Men, and I wanted to have, like, complete runs as I got older. But it was just Marvel. And it wasn't until, I would say, the 90s when they started having when I went to a comic shop. And when I went to a comic shop, I saw Valiant Comics. Image Comics had just launched, and I noticed that, you know, all the artists that we were, you know, artists were really, really, really hot then. And looking back at some of those Image books, some of the stuff was bad, you know, because you had a lot of artists who had no writing experience writing these books, and some of the stuff was bad. And to top it all off, some of the books were coming out late. Books that were, for those that don't know, comics come out usually on a month-to-month basis. If it's a real popular comic, they don't do it as much now, but it'll come out like maybe bi-weekly. But Image Comics, you would get like an issue one, and you wouldn't see an issue two until like 3 or 4 months later. And by that time, you really didn't care about the book, or it was like, oh, that's out. But it was just the hype of just going to the comic shop. I think, what was New Comics Day back then? Wasn't like Friday back in the early 90s?
I forgot when it changed from Fridays. It used to be Fridays. Then it kind of became Thursday / Friday, because half the books would come out, and then the other half. Then it was a Wednesday, Thursday. And then it all just became Wednesday. Really now, stores get their books on Tuesday, but
They're not gonna put them. But the thing was, is like, okay, so you know, Fridays I would have my lunch money and everything saved up. I would have any money, you know, left over saved up, and I would, right after school, I'd walk to the, it was like a little mini mall. It wasn't a huge mall, but it was like, you know, a little smaller mall, and they had a comic shop in there, and I would walk there. We go there, spend the money I had on the comics I got. I had a little pull list or subscription where they would hold my books for me, and you know, after I left there, we would go to Toys R Us and play the demos of Street Fighter or whatever video they had in there, and then we would leave. I'd go home, get my allowance, and go back to the comic book store, get some more books, go back up there on Saturday, hang out there, looking, flipping through books, go back on Sunday up there from the arcade to the comic shop, and that was my weekend. Every weekend was the comic shop and the arcade. And that was pretty much it, and most of the time was spent in the comic shop. And you know, that was pretty much how it went for me. Indie comics, there were other indie comics that publishers that came out, and you know, being a younger child, some of the stuff was real flashy. That kind of caught my eye. Remember Ultraverse?
Mm-hmm.
Prime, and I think he had a cartoon too.
Yeah, I used to read all that stuff. You know,
didn't Marvel bomb?
I'm starting to feel like we should have grew up together, man. We would have bonded. We would have been soulmates. I mean, geez.
You know why? Because a lot of people, some people, they were kind of, you know, if they were in the comics, even now these days, some people are kind of embarrassed to say they're just like wrestling fans, kind of. They don't want people to know you have that group. There's some people, they don't want people to know that they're comics fans. They'll go see a movie because it's popular and everybody's seeing it, but they won't hang out in the comic store, say they're in a comic store. Some people won't. I mean, it's not as bad as it used to be, but, you know, there's still some out there. But yeah, I mean, comics back then were, I mean, it was, this was during like, the would you compare what went on in the 90s after Superman died to the Attitude Era?
Somewhat. You know, the 90s was the extreme, put everybody in black, make them a bit more violent, have them kill off the enemies,
the guest stars.
You know,
you could put out any, well, because I remember from the 90s that Spider-Man guest starred in everybody's comic. Punisher was hot. The new Ghost Rider, Danny Ketch, he was hot. Archangel from X-Factor, he was hot.
Because they was the extreme kill.
And Wolverine, of course.
Well, Wolverine, he works 7 days a week, so
yeah. And see, that was another thing that I don't know if you have a question this coming up, and I'll get to this when I talk about one of the reasons why I tend to gravitate towards Valiant Comics now, and why Valiant Comics got me back into comics a couple of years ago, like really hardcore back in. I was always dabbling and still found out what's going on, but they got me back in hardcore. Was Wolverine? Okay, Wolverine, like many other comics characters like Batman now and everything else, but Wolverine was a character who could be in Madripoor in his book, he could be in Genosha in the X-Men, he could be, you know, with Reed Richards helping out with something going on with the Negative Zone, he could be in outer space with, you know, well, now he's an Avenger, so, you know, he could be outer space with them on the Savage Land or somewhere, you know, so Wolverine could be 20 different places. But people could not get enough of Wolverine, and back then nobody knew much about Wolverine. Now everyone knows his, you know, his origin or his history, but back then he was Wolverine or he was Logan. And I just remember him, when he would take his mask off, his hair, he just reminded me of Clint Eastwood, and the way his hair was just like, I can't explain it, just pointy.
Mm-hmm.
And like his beard too was pointy. Remember when he would wear all blue? When he wore all blue and he had his, like, his he had his eyes that were kind of dark, and
I don't remember that, but you know, it was feral. I'll explain this about Wolverine real quick. They did a book, a two-part book, where all it showed him was like every panel was a different day, and the whole story was, okay, Monday he's fighting with the Avengers. Tuesday he's in Manipool. Wednesday he's helping Spider-Man out. Thursday he's teaming up with this person. Friday he's in the Savage Land. Saturday he's playing cards. Sunday he's fighting somebody else. And it was a pretty interesting thing. It was supposed to be Wolverines everywhere. But the truth of the matter is, we tend to think comic book timeline, just because two books come at the same time, we kind of think that those two storylines is happening at the same exact moment. But you read a 6-issue book, that doesn't take place over 6 months. That whole battle could take place anywhere between 5 minutes and 5 days, or, you know, whatever.
I'm fine with that. The issue I had with it was this is something that, you know, comics have gotten better with, but early on you didn't see as much was, say for example, I don't want to use Wolverine because he has like a healing factor, but if you got a character who was just a superhero who could, say for example, their ability was telekinesis, and they broke a leg, you know what I'm saying, and then you would see him in another comic, and it might have been a tie-in or something, but their leg wasn't or you see where their eye would have got put. Okay, their eye would get put out, and they have a patch over their eye, and then you see him this next time. You see him, the patch is on the wrong eye, or you see. And I just brought that out to talk about continuity, and that's why Valiant Comics in the 90s was something that was amazing to me. And I really didn't, the only reason why I didn't collect Valiant Comics back then, because Valiant Comics were too damn expensive. They were like $2.25, then they were like $2.95, and I was like $3 for a comic back in the 90s. That was like, this better be a damn good comic. And the books were good. I mean, they had some good stuff, but the thing with Valiant was, like, say for example, they had Rye or Bloodshot. If he was in, okay, so if Rye's in Las Vegas, and not Rye, Bloodshot's in Las Vegas, and he's fighting Master Dark. Mm-hmm. You might see one of the Harbinger children in the background, riding by, going to a battle or running from Harada. Okay, and it'll say every scene was timestamped, so it'll say Saturday, February 20th, 6:33 p.m. When you went over to that Harbinger book, if it said Friday, September 20th, 6:35 p.m. you will see Bloodshot in the back fighting Harada, in the background fighting Harada, or it was something connected. And they were so good with this, so good with keeping everything that tight continuity, you know, that it was just an amazing thing. Their stories were just so interconnected, so tightly connected. And if Bloodshot's in Las Vegas, because everything was date stamped, you would definitely would not see him over, you know, fighting Exo Manowar, you know, in Antarctica or something like that. You wouldn't see it because he's tied up in Las Vegas and there's the Harbinger children in the background. And, you know, and I know it's kind of difficult when you have someone like Marvel. Marvel is huge. They have tons of books. You got characters who have, I mean, how many books do the X-Men have, or the Avengers have?
The X-Men alone, or the, well, each one got several books each. I mean,
then they coming out with more. They coming out with more. But anyway, we talking about Marvel Comics. We got a show for that. Let's get back to the indie comics.
Yeah, so your job, if you choose to take it, it's to convince me every week how good indie books are.
To be honest, it's about what you're into, your cup of tea. If you're into superheroes and just straight up superheroes,
you're going to convince me how good indie books are. That's what
I will. I will tell you. I mean, but I will also say it's based off your cup of tea. Like me, I love superhero comics, but I'm at the stage now where when I sit back and say, what do I want to spend my money on? I don't want to spend my money on superhero comics at this point in my life. They're excellent. The superhero comics that come out right now are good. I want to make that clear. You can go to a comic shop right now and pick up some great, there's some great writers writing some great books. One of my favorite ones is Thor by Jason Aaron's doing Thor. But the stage I'm at in my life and what really is my cup of tea are these indie books. And you know, some of these books are extremely graphic. Some of them use a lot of profanity. Some of them show a lot of blood, a lot of guts. Some of them, not all of them, you know, this is not like, you know, some of them are, the thing I guess about the indie books that I like is that because these aren't really, a lot of these, unless you get a company who has licensed properties like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or G.I. Joe, a lot of these characters are creator owned. So these creators can do what they want with these characters. So if they want to kill somebody, they're dead. They don't have to worry about, you know, getting permission, or they don't have to worry about how they write this person. It's theirs. They can do what they want to do, and they have the absolute freedom to do what they want to do with these characters. Now, I will say this. There are some writers who need to be edited. They need editors like at Marvel and DC to help guide them as they create and as they plot some of these stories. Because just like there's some excellent indie comics, and just like you can find bad Marvel and DC books, you can find bad indie comics, of course. Because there are some people who they start writing and they write themselves, or they paint themselves into a hole. They write themselves into a corner, and you say, this started off so good. What the hell happened?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because a lot of times there's no one there to look over their shoulder and say, okay, you know, you're doing this now, but remember 10 issues ago, this happened. So is this going to make sense? One of the things that the Marvel comics I always liked were they would mention or reference something that happened, and then the editor would have a little box and be like, see issue 320 of Amazing Spider-Man. And it's like, yeah, you know, you go back and be like, oh, okay, that's what they're talking about. It'd be like a little footnote within one of the panels. So, you know, that's how it is. But yeah, I can definitely do that. I mean, it's just a matter of your personal taste. When I first, to get back, Valiant Comics was a hot, hot book back in the 90s. I remember seeing a Wizard magazine, and Wizard always had their top 10 in there. And I remember in their top 10, every book was a Valiant book except one was a Spider-Man. I think number 8 was Spider-Man. Every other book, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then 9 and 10 were all Valiant books. And Valiant was hot. It was like if you could get a Harbinger Zero, or you could get some of that pre-Unity, which Unity was a huge company crossover they had with every book. It was an excellent storyline. I have it. It was, I believe, 18 parts. You know, some of those books to this day, you can't find them. Now, if you do find some Valiant books from the 90s, like most 90s books, you can find them in the quarter bin. Surfer and I, we went to Comic-Con together. I saw a whole lot of books from the 90s that were some stuff back then that, you know, I just either couldn't get, or, you know, were $25, $30 then, and now I can get them. They're $1, $2, 50 cents. So, you know, that's how it was with the Valiant comics. But anyway, Valiant comics were loved. They had a huge following. Even after they were, you know, acclaimed, the video company bought them, and then they bought them because they really wanted to make video games and stuff out of the characters, and they did with Exo Manowar. He had a video game with Iron Man. Shadow Man had a video game, and then when Acclaim went out of business, the comics went out too. So there was a group of friends who they loved the comics, and they went and they went through a huge auction and everything. It took them a long time to do it, but they actually got the rights to, you know, they bought the company, bought the property, bought the, you know, all the stuff that's connected with Valiant, and they relaunched it the Tuesday before Free Comic Day in 2012 with Exo Manowar #1. And I started off surfing when I went in this comic store. I said, I'm only going to collect Valiant comics. I'm not looking at anything else. I see the price of these books. I'm not getting anything else. Mm-hmm. What did I look over and see? The Walking Dead. No, I watched the Walking Dead TV show. I was like, I like this. I like this. I'm not touching the comic. I have no reason to touch the comic. I'll just watch the show. Then one day I'm standing in there and I happen to look over, because they group all the indie comics together in my comic shop. And I looked at Walking Dead. And Walking Dead is a very easy book to get into. Very easy book to get onto, to jump into. It's not too complex as far as, you know, you can tell someone in 5 minutes what's going on, but it's very, very good. It's a very, very good book.
Very accessible. And,
say it again.
Very accessible.
Yeah, extremely, extremely. Like, you can jump on at any point. You know, I dare say that once you jump on, you'll want to go back and see what happened. Please, people who watch the TV show, don't assume that it's the exact same or what's going on in the comic, because it's not. The comic and the TV show, they got two different storylines going on. You might have somebody who, like Daryl, that's popular from the TV show. He's not even in the comic. He was created for the TV show.
Well, they did mention that they're going to try to do more storyline from the books.
And that's fine. I like the fact that they're doing the storyline that they got right now on the TV show, and I don't want to spoil it. Well, let me say this. this podcast right here is going to have spoilers in it. I mean, it's, I can't sit here and talk about books and just throw hints. You know, I'm going to, you know, I mean, Surfer's not reading too many indie comics. I don't know too many people that are, but it will have some spoilers. So if you haven't watched this,
don't worry, you're not alone. There are plenty of people that only stick to indie books. You know, some, a lot of people feel that Image is putting out the best stuff today, and I do kind of believe that, because you know, we're creator owned is the way to go these days. People can, you don't have an editor.
Image Comics, though, back in the day, okay, you had Marvel. No, you had it was one point where Valiant was like the most popular. It was Marvel, Valiant, and DC was third. That, yes, that was true. That was a point when you look at it, it did happen. And because DC wasn't putting out some stuff, if you go back and you do research, you'll find that out. And I lived through that. You know, for people listening who may have been new to comics, you had Image, which was extremely popular, but Image did that self in, but Image never went out of business. Come along Robert Kirkman, and I think he really played a big part in helping this company out, and now Image is like putting out some great stuff. The thing I have with Image is that Image Comics to me are better read in trade, so I have a ton of Image Comics that are in trade paperback form, because you want to sit down and really feast on four or five issues at a time. You know, back when I was coming up, and it still happens now, but back when I was coming up, you could read a single issue of a comic and it was packed with dialogue, it was packed with, you know, just a lot. And now, you know, there's some comics you could get and it's like, it needs to, I feel like it could be compressed. It's like, okay, you'll have a word on this page and then you'll see pictures, you know, maybe two panels of dialogue, picture, you know, not saying anything's bad with that, but the storytellers, I think they stretch out some of these storylines now. But and the thing is, I have a website that I go to get my indie comics and well, to get my trades, my trade paperbacks, and I pretty much get all my trades half off. And you know, so I'll get where there might be an Image comic that's $2.99. I can get five issues of it instead of paying $15. I can spend $7 and get those five issues in a nice paperback form. Now, if you're a person that likes covers and you like single issue bag and boards and you like all that stuff, mm-hmm. that's one thing. But I like holding a trade paperback in my hand and just going through five issues, and it sits nice on the shelf sideways. You know, the cover's nice, the paper's nice. I don't know. You read trades or you just do single issues?
I can do a trade, but I would rather read original trades as opposed to. Maybe I'll stuck in the past, but I can't see myself waiting 6 to 8 months for a trade to come out.
That depends on who the company is. DC, you wait. Like, the reason why I'm a Green Lantern fan, and the reason why I'm reading Green Lantern in the single issues is because Green Lantern, I mean, okay, if you get Green Lantern, and they do this because, you know, they don't want, you know, if they're going to sell a trade, they have a, you know, they want to keep it separate. They want to respect the fans who are buying the single issues and stuff as well. So, you know, you'll get Green Lantern. They may have a storyline that ends this Wednesday. Like, Lights Out ends this Wednesday, the first story arc of New Creative Team. Mm-hmm. That Green Lantern book probably ain't come, that trade paperback of those issues probably won't come out till like April next year. Now, Image Comics, this is what they do. Image will come out with issues 1 through 5. And then they'll when the trade comes out, they'll have the first trade, more than likely, not all the time, more than likely it'll be those first five issues for $10, $9.99. That's to get people to try it. And then when that trade comes out, not only will 1 through 5 be out, but on the same day, number 6 will come out. You know, so it's like, okay, you read those 5, I gotta get back to the comic book store to get number 6. So then you'll get number 6. And another thing that a lot of these indie comics are doing too is that they are coming out with $1 issues, where like you can.
Everybody does that.
Yeah, but I mean, they do it for a lot. I mean, I haven't seen all new X-Men number 1 for $1 yet. You know what I'm saying? But I can go and get Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is a very popular indie comic. I got number 1. Let me tell you, a lot of these indie comics that I'm reading, I got because I tried out the dollar issue. I like what I read, and I went and got the trade. Well, I start picking up from there. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is, and this is nothing like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that, you know, were on TV back in the day. This is, you know, a lot of people don't know when Turtles first started out, it was a very graphic comic. It was black and white, but it was graphic, you know. It was more serious. They weren't, you know, telling jokes about pizza and doing all that stuff. I remember, look, Baxter Stockman was black. You know, it was just a lot of stuff in there, but this is a very popular book. I mean, I might as well jump right in here. There's this book called Lock and Key. And Lock and Key is basically about, there's this family. I got this is by IDW. It's written by Joe Hill, and it's drawn by Gabriel Rodriguez. I like this first issue so much because that I went out and got, I ordered the trade. In this first issue, they have a flashback, and they show these two guys knocking on this door. One has a hatchet. The other one has a gun behind his back. Mm-hmm. And when the lady answers the door, they're like, "Well, you know, we're looking for your husband. He was out guidance counseling in school." And they're like, "She's the wife's like, oh, you know, he stepped away, but he'll be right back." And she's like, "What you doing all the way out here?" And they're like, "Oh, we, you know, Mr. Locke, he mentioned that, you know, he vacations in this area, and I'm not too far away, so you know, I just thought I would come and visit. You know, my uncle let me borrow the truck," and they show the truck, and in the back of the truck is two dead bodies back there. So. The children are all down by the lake, and they're like, you know, they wish they could be somewhere else for their summer vacation. And, you know, the older brother's complaining. The younger sister's like, you know, just quit complaining. And the younger brother, like any other younger brother, he's into everything. And then they flash back to the house. And when they get back to the house, the father walks in, and the two students that he had, they didn't show it, but they killed him. So it flashes off to the children going to the funeral. And now at this point, these children are like, you know, their life has changed. Their father was murdered. And they end up, the mother takes them and they move to this place called the Lock House, which I believe is in Massachusetts. And from there, they continue to do flashbacks. So they flashback and show you what actually happened that summer in the house. Mm-hmm. So you get back and you see where one of the boys, he raped the mother. The father is, you know, they killed him. He was shot, stabbed, or whatever, or chopped up, whatever. The children come home. They hear this noise. They come home, look through the window, and see what's going on. And then the two killers notice they're outside, so then they go and they chase after them. And then they flash back again to, you know, what's going on in the present. You know, you get to catch up with their lives. Then they flash back again, and you see how the children ended up stopping the two, you know, the two murderers. One of them got killed. The mother ended up killing one with the hatchet, and the other one ended up he ended up getting knocked out, and he ended up in jail. Mm-hmm. So from this stage, you just look at it, and if you're just flipping through, you're like, okay, this is just, you know, a horror comic, blah, 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 or they're just blood and guts. But no, it's all goes around this house. It's something with this house that they moved into, and the younger brother finds a key. He's snooping around the house. It's a huge house, like a mansion, has a lot of rooms. He finds this key, and he finds this key can pretty much unlock any door, or from what he can tell. So he unlocks this door, and the weird thing happens is when he goes to the door, he opens it, his spirit steps out of his body, and his body just drops dead. And the spirit keeps walking, and the spirit looks down at his hands and realizes, I'm a spirit, and it looks back and sees his body, and it jumps back into the body, and the boy comes back to life. And as soon as he wakes up, he sits up and the door slams, and that's the end of issue one. Yeah. And it was just a great issue. The artwork was good, the writing was good. It was a number one issue that was enough to make me want to go and read the second issue. And I think if it got me one in the next issue, it did its job.
Yeah, I've not read Lock and Key, but I did see the television pilot, which is a shame it never got on TV.
That was all new to me, Surfer. I had just heard about that.
Well, Fox commissioned the pilot, and then they changed their mind. But the pilot has been shown at different cons, and everybody that seemed to watch it seemed to enjoy it enough that they could have made somewhat of a go. But
Well, that was lock and key. This one that I got is called Prince of Cats by Ron Wimberly.
Mm-hmm.
And this right here was released just as a trade paperback. There weren't any, it's not a collected edition. It's not like issue 1 through 4 or 5 and they bound it together. No, this came out as a trade paperback. It was released by Vertigo Comics, which is an imprint of DC.
Right.
But I consider them kind of, you know, indie. I mean, Vertigo isn't what I don't think Vertigo is what it used to be back in the day when they had Sandman. You know, they're starting to find their way again, releasing some different stuff now. But this book pretty much...
Before you go on, I think part of the problem was Vertigo was outselling DC proper, and I don't think certain people liked that. So.
No, they didn't like it. Okay, they took Constantine, which I was talking to Lex. I don't think he knew, but... before I had told him, but Constantine, some people may have saw the movie. I did not see the movie. Keanu Reeves played it. I'm sure you did.
Yeah, I've seen the movie.
Yeah, but they Constantine was a Hellblazer was the comic, and he was a very popular comic.
I had more than the first 100 issues of it. Hellblazer was one of those books that when I read it, it was in the 30s, and I went back and spent the money to get those first couple of dozen issues.
Well, give us a brief, brief synopsis, as best you can, about what it's about.
Well, Hellblazer, John Constantine,
what's he like?
Well, he's not really a good person, chain smoker, drunk, but... it's one of those things where heaven doesn't want him and hell can't wait to get him, but he goes around preventing demons from taking over. And
what would you label him as? You wouldn't call him a hero. What would you call him?
No,
can you label him?
He was more of an anti-hero. And, you know, he sprung from Swamp Thing.
Yep.
And, you know, supernatural book. But
if you met him in the street, would you trust John Constantine?
Maybe. It depends on...
I wouldn't trust his ass. He seemed like that... Oh, well, okay. From your knowledge, and I know you don't read too much DC, but I know you keep up on everything, especially Marvel and DC. I mean, you do a pretty good job of keeping up on current news. What did you hear from people when they found out that they were canceling Hellblazer and Constantine was coming to DC proper?
Well, most people figured that he didn't belong in the regular DC universe, and they should have kept him with Vertigo. But
they've definitely showcased him since he's been over there. I have not read any of his own title, Constantine, but I have read some Justice League Dark, and I will say that when Peter Milligan was writing it, I didn't read any of that, but what I wrote that Jeff Lemire wrote was very good. I think that you have to, some of these genres, some people, you know, if there's just some genres they're better in than others, like Ed Brubaker, he's good at like writing noir and like, you know, and you can kind of bring some of those elements over to other characters. I think he did that with Captain America, right? Wasn't he writing Captain America more like a noir type character for a while, or writing that book that way?
Captain America was written as a spy book, of course.
Uh-huh.
And he did the impossible. He brought Bucky back to life in a way that nobody got upset about.
A character I didn't give a damn about before.
No, it wasn't that. It was one of those things.
I'm saying me. I did not care about Bucky at all in any way, shape, or form.
It was just one of those things, like you know, people, when you die, they're like, yeah, he'll be back. But there were certain characters, they just never came back to life.
Well, I know we're going off on a tangent, but let me ask you this. Winter shows, how would you compare Winter Soldier versus Nomad? Remember Nomad when his own title, Nomad?
Mm-hmm.
How would you compare those two characters?
Well, I can't say I know a lot about Nomad, and I know some about Winter Soldier, but if you was asking me who I would take, I'm taking Winter Soldier. And
oh, yeah,
one of the things
people gonna find out a whole lot about Winter Soldier. Why?
Because of the movie, which the trailer looked pretty good.
It looked real good. I saw it.
One of the things that they retconned about Bucky was, all right, originally Bucky was, you know, just the kid sidekick. Yeah, Cap, I'm here for you. And
like Robin.
But as they retconned him, he was more of a guy that was willing to do dirty work for the army and do things Cap couldn't bring himself to do. Even though it was World War II and Cap was shooting people also.
This is when he was... Is this when... Was he still Bucky at the time, or...?
Yes.
Okay.
And,
So, let me ask you this. Would you say that... Would you compare Bucky... And what's his real name again? It's,
Bucky's real name?
Was it something Barnes? Bucky Barnes, right? Something like that?
Well, Bucky's a nickname. Yeah, Barnes but is his last name, yeah.
All right, so would you compare him, what they did with him? I mean, you'd look at his what Captain America wanted him to be and what he turned out, what he was, why he was still Bucky. And then you look at him coming back and what he is now. Listening to you talk like that reminds me of Jason Todd, how he was as Robin and how Batman wanted him to be, but how he chose to be as Robin. And then him going away and coming back as Red Hood.
Well, no, it's not the same.
I know, of course it's not the same, but I'm just saying, I mean, if you look at the power parallels and how they use these characters to, I mean, because, okay, Captain America's like John Cena. I mean, Captain America's like, he's going to do what's right.
Okay, but the retcon they did of Bucky's character during World War II, it's not like, okay, when Jason Todd was Robin, he did things that Batman wasn't willing to do. He still, I mean, Jason Todd was a hothead, but he wasn't.
Jason Todd would sit there and
doing secret
a criminal
and snuffing people out.
Well, no. I mean, well, obviously it's differences because, I mean, Batman was a vigilante and he even handled things differently. He did some stuff Captain America, you know. I mean, Batman has a code too, but nothing like Captain America's code. I mean, so I'm not comparing it in that sense. I'm talking about how they were able to take a character and make them the sidekick of a character who had higher morals or a higher moral standard and have there be some type of conflict between the mentorship, kind of like with Anakin and Obi-Wan, of course. You know, you see that a lot, what happens. You know, and then this character, when they came back revamped, they came back as a total badass, like Darth Vader, like, what's his name, Winter Soldier, like Red Hood, someone who has completely gone over the edge where it's like, now they'll do whatever they need to do. I mean, I guess I'm still a companion to Nomad. How would you compare Winter Soldier to somebody like the Punisher?
Well, Winter Soldier isn't homicidal crazy like the Punisher.
Well, I also think that's how, well, you know, I take that back too. I guess that's also how the Punisher is written.
Don't get it twisted about the Punisher.
I'm saying how he's written because, I mean, the Punisher was... He's another character that we talked about, Constantine, who I feel like, you know, they could do a lot more with. They could do more with the Punisher when he's separated from Spider-Man.
Well, that's what the Max series was about.
That's what I'm saying. So you have someone like Constantine bringing it full circle, who, you know, was able to do more and separate from Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and these characters who were like running around in tights, and he's a person who is more, I guess you could say, more based in reality as far as he's a chain smoker. He's dealing with drinking. He's you can question his morals in a sense of, okay, he may do a good deed, but if that means having to lie to you to get you to, I mean, it may be in your best interest, but to get you there, he may have to lie to you. He may have to knock you out to get you out of harm's way. He may have to do something that you would consider cruddy initially. You know, but it may all be for the greater good. So what I'm saying is that, you know, how do you see when it comes to Winter Soldier and explaining to someone who never heard Winter Soldier, where do you think he falls into that? You know, from Bucky to transition from Bucky to Winter Soldier. Do you think that Winter Soldier now is just like, is there any of Captain America's influence left in him or no?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was Captain America while you know, Steve Rogers was dead, so he tried
but
to live up
still,
to...
But even still, what type of Captain America... I mean, he did something Captain America wouldn't have done, right?
No, I mean, he was trying to live up to Cap after Cap died. So
he was pulling that gun every chance he got.
Well, he's not a super soldier.
Yeah, so he had to rely on.
But he didn't. He wasn't snuffing people out. But
did he kill anybody?
From what I read, I wouldn't say that. I mean, yeah, he wasn't beyond shooting somebody, but it wasn't like just that was the point of him. He wasn't just going around trying to shoot people. He just used his gun when he needed to.
And let me stop you right there. See, this is what I'm talking about, people listening in, is that comic books to me, and this is the stuff that I live for, comic books to me is looking at these deep issues, looking at these characters, looking at how they're written. I've heard this saying once, and I have to really agree with it. You know, growing up as a child, I wouldn't agree with this statement, but you know, because it's all about what I saw first. Kind of like if you know, guys, you see a girl, whatever, it's like, well, you know, she looks good. That's just it right there. But after, you know, once you get deep in a relationship, looking good just ain't enough. You can look good and not have any common sense, any type of sense at all. You can be a nasty individual. But what I'm saying is that what the saying was is they said there's no such thing as a bad character. It's how that character is written. And I have to agree with that. There are some characters who I wouldn't even have touched before. Case in point, Captain America. I was never a Captain America fan. I've read Captain America comics in the past, and it was nothing that I could stick with on a monthly basis. I mean, like arcs, but it was nothing I could stick with. When I read what Brubaker was doing, I liked it. I was getting Captain America every month. I liked the way he wrote it. I mean, and then maybe somebody else who read it and was like, I don't like this. This isn't what I, you know, wanted a Captain America book. But that spy stuff, and I liked it. It really made Captain America. It went beyond, you know, him just being a symbol of America, and it went into just, you know, some great storytelling. Mm-hmm. You know, just being a symbol just wasn't enough. And I think that's one of the issues I have with Superman, is that Superman is not a book I can read on a weekly basis, Surfer. I can't do it. I mean, I can read people's take on Superman. I can read Superman Earth One. I can read Birthright. I can read you know, stuff like that, but All-Star Superman. But when it comes to reading him on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, and collecting his run, I just can't do it. You know, I need people who are more. One of the things about Wolverine that attracted me, and it could be the same for other people, I don't know, was the fact that he had some shit that he had to deal with, and it was like, you know, he was more based in reality. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he had some. He'd wake up in the middle of the night and from nightmares, and he done shredded the whole bed. You know, I mean, that would make you wonder how would he feel comfortable, you know, being in a relationship with someone falling asleep next to him, not knowing if he could kill him the next morning if he wake up and he didn't, you know, slice that slit their throat. You know, I mean, these are things that appeal to me with these characters, and it wasn't just okay, I just came in, flew in, saved the day. I want to know what it's like when they go home and deal with their backstory when they, you know, I mean, it. Before All-Star Superman, I mean, I know it was kind of out there, but it made you wonder, like, what did Superman do when he wasn't Superman? Yeah, he was Clark Kent as a disguise, but when he went home, I mean, did he hang out in the apartment? Did he, you know, just watch TV? Did he watch Dancing with the Stars? Did he, you know, go to Subway? Did he do any of this stuff, or did he just kind of, I mean, did he go to sleep? What did he do? I mean, I don't know if you ever, you know, maybe I'm thinking... Maybe I think really too hard about comics, but I just had time to do that coming up. But I look for the depth, and you know, when it comes to and what's put into these characters and everything. And that's why I was asking you about Winter Soldier, because I had not read too much on his character, and I just wanted to know. And I was trying to compare him to what I knew to see if it was anything close. Now, was he was what happened to? And it's safe that you can go into spoiler territory with this. Hopefully everybody's seen this movie. If not, then you about to get spoiled. What happened to Bucky in the first Captain America movie?
Well, they were on a train, and you know, it was one of those cliffside trains, and during the action, Bucky kind of fell off the train, and so he was assumed dead up in the mountains. Of course, snow everywhere. You didn't see what happened to him after he fell out the train, a fast-moving train. You know, wartime, so they just assumed he was dead. They never went back for his body or anything like that in the movie.
So now it's a thing where he can possibly come back and be upset that no one came looking for him. Possibly.
Well, we know that the Russians found him and made him the Winter Soldier, which they would put him on cryogenics and thaw him out when they needed him to do a job, then freeze him up again, which is why he's known like a, like a, you know, they didn't know he actually existed or not, because they only let him out to do whatever job they needed, and then he went back into cryogenics.
So, and it's funny, because when you were saying that, you know what I thought of? Agent Venom. I mean, I know it's a different thing, but it was like, you know, we sending you out to do what we need you to do, and then after that, come on back in here and go back in the wheelchair. But, okay, but, I mean, like, this show isn't just about indie comics, it's about pop culture, so get your money ready, because you got Captain America Winter Soldier coming, you got Thor 2, you got, what they making? They got a lot of movies coming out, and just get your money ready.
It's in January.
What is it?
I, Frankenstein,
really?
Mm-hmm.
I need to sit down, and this might interest you too. You might already know about this, Surfer. If you know about this already, I'm not going to say anything. I wouldn't be surprised if you know about it. But there is actually this site that will give you points to watch movie trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you collect a certain amount of points, they'll send you a gift card, like the Walmart, Target, and places like that.
No, I didn't know about it.
Well, I will give you the link, my friend, and then you can sit up there and, if you like the type of person that like watching movie trailers, just watch them trailers, and you can take them gift cards or whatever. I mean, it translates to free money. You're getting something free. You can take it to the store and, you know, use it. So who wouldn't want to do that? But anyway, getting back to this, we were talking about Vertigo, and I wanted to wrap up the thing with Constantine, because Constantine coming over, you, like you said, you were invested in Hellblazer. I was not, as far as getting that. I was more into Sandman. Sadly, I don't have as many Sandman issues as I would like. Some are still in my parents' house, but I do plan on getting the omnibus version of Sandman. The first one is out. It's $150, but I can get it for $75.
I don't own the omnibus, but I would love to be able to just buy a ton of omnibus and have a nice little bookcase full of them.
That's what I'm doing with the trade. Well, let me tell you what omnibus I have. I have one omnibus, and I have two compendiums, and I have two on the way. Okay, I have the new. I have the new X-Men omnibus. I do have that. That Grant Morrison did with the new X-Men. I have that. I wanted to get the New Warriors omnibus because I'm a huge New Warriors fan, and it's just one of them things. I'm like a Buffalo Bills fan. You know how the Buffalo Bills couldn't never win a Super Bowl back in the day, but you had those little Buffalo Bills fan that's just like, I don't care. That's how I was with the New Warriors. It was like, you know, that when the New Warriors first came out, you know, I stuck with them, got every issue of every run, even that one when they were Reality Stars. I went and got that trade just because I'm a New Warriors fan, and I'm just cheesy that way when it comes to, I'm a completist when it comes to New Warriors. So they're starting the New Warriors again, coming out in February, I believe, and I cannot wait. But the New Warriors has an omnibus that was released, and that's when I was kind of starting to wonder if they were going to release a new series, because I'm like, okay, they're starting to put some effort in the New Warriors. I'm still kind of bummed because I want to see Night Thrasher. Seeing a character of color growing up, a black man leading a team, was something that I thought was an amazing thing during that time, even though he was blatantly a Batman ripoff initially. You know, I just really, really got into... I really, really got into, you know, the New Warriors. So they have this omnibus out. I think it's $99. I can probably get it for $50. I already have the single issues. I think I have, like, two sets of the first 25 episodes. 25 issues, but I just want that hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, you know, I mean, I don't know. I might get it.
What are you about getting these trades in digital? Have you you have the means for that?
You know what? I will read single issues in digital. I won't read a trade in digital. I don't like sitting in front of a computer reading on devices. I don't like reading a computer.
You don't have a tablet.
No. No, I don't even like reading. I've read on tablets. I don't like it. I like, part of the comic experience for me is having the comic in my hand. Now, I don't knock Comicsology and digital versions and stuff, because there are some people that is so convenient for. They can have a whole collection of comics that is accessible to them from their cell phone, from a tablet. They can log on to any computer anywhere. They don't have to worry about. With me, when I leave out the house, if I'm going somewhere, like if my wife's going to Walmart and I want to sit in the car, I got to grab a book bag with a stack of books.
Well, you know what I've learned about digital this week alone? Depending on how you read it, it can make the reading experience a lot longer. Because I got the Avengers Endless War time. And so I used
the whole thing digital?
No, I got the hardcover book. But I used the code that came with it to get it digitally. So I've been reading it digitally, right?
Uh-huh.
And I know you can... I can read it on the tablet, like where you can look at the whole page, but I've been reading it the way where it scrolls from box to box, and it just seemed like I'm reading a longer book that way.
I know what you mean, but I had to read it that way, box to box, and the reason being is because when they were doing it where like they would do part of a, like if they have a splash page, obviously to see the whole page clear, they'll zoom in on certain parts, then they'll go to the next one, and it just took away from the experience for me. Since you mentioned digital, I'm glad you mentioned that. One of the things about digital that I do have kind of a beef with is I just don't feel like digital comics should be the same price as the print version.
Yeah, I agree with that, but
I mean, because you aren't, there's no hard copy, you know what I'm saying? They don't have to spend the money. It costs them nothing to. Not compared to printing these issues, it doesn't cost them anything to just put it on a site. You know, I mean, the space is just when if you're getting Avengers number or whatever that's coming out, why should you pay $3.99 for that? And now, granted, there are $3.99 books that you know. Would they give you a free digital copy?
With the $3.99 books, yes.
Yeah. Now DC with their $3.99 copies, they'll give you. You got to pay a dollar for their digital version.
Yeah, I know. They have a $3.99 and a $4.99 that comes with the digital.
Yeah.
Marvel but their $2.99 books do not come digital. Yeah. It doesn't come with a digital copy. And then, of course, they sell it on their site for $2.99 also, or $3.99.
If you are a comic fan, if you're thinking about getting back into comics, digital might be the route you want to go. Sign up for Comixology in a second. Surfer, I think he knows another site. In a second, he'll let you know. But Comixology, you can sign up. See what the experience is like. You can create an account. It doesn't cost anything. They just want an email. If you're funny about that, you can always – everyone should have a junk email as far as I'm concerned. One that you just use to give that email address. You just have to give it out to places that you don't want to have your business email or whatever. But anyway, give the email, and they always have free comics on there. And you know, you can download and you know, look at these free comics if your cell phone is big enough, the screen is big enough. I have a Galaxy 4, so you know, I watch Netflix on there, I can read comics on there, and I'm okay. You know, that's the smallest I probably would look at something like that on a phone. It would look great on a tablet, and of course you could always sit at the your laptop or PC. But the thing about the tablet, I will say this, is that you can hold the tablet in a way where it's like your you can get like the full cover. I mean, it can be almost the size of an actual comic that you read. The one thing that I do have an issue with, like Jeff Lemire came out with a comic called Trillium, released through Vertigo, and the neat thing about this book, Surfer, was that you would read it was a flip book, so you would read half of it, and then you would flip it over, and then it would start a new story. But the neat thing about it was, in the middle of the book, where the two stories met, was where the two characters met. And I said to myself, how would someone get that experience if they were reading it digital? And furthermore, how would someone get that experience if they were reading it in trade? Because they can't duplicate that. So I'm interested to see how they're going to do it when it gets to that point. But, yeah, I mean, if you don't want to go to the comic store, or you don't want to deal with just making space for floppies, I call them single issues, I call them floppies, then, you know, and the way, like Surfer said, you can get collections. And Comixology runs sales. They do run sales, though. You can get sales where they'll be like, if, say, for example, it's Silver Surfer's coming out with a new book. So say, for example, they might be like, okay, we might have volume 3 of Silver Surfer. That whole run's 99 cents. I mean, you can go back and get however issue, many issues is in that run. If it was 30 issues, you spend $30 for 30 issues. I mean, if that's something that you want to take advantage of, you know, you can do. But is there another outlet for digital comics besides Comixology? Is there another one?
Well, there was, but they kind of stopped.
Okay.
And other than, like, you know, I do have the DC app. I have the Marvel app. I did have the Dark Horse app. I got to reinstall that. But a lot of the companies have their own app, too. So you can get it directly from them. You don't have to get it from Comixology. But Comixology is kind of a one-stop shop.
Really?
Of course, when you buy the Marvel books with the code, once you put the code in, you can just go onto your device and download it down, and then you got it.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, that sounds good. All right, let's move this along, because I got a little bit more stuff I want to cover, and we don't want to run this for 3 or 4 hours. Well, we can't, but anyway, so let's cover some stuff. I was going to talk about Prince of Cats, which was by Ron Wimberly. Again, it's a Vertigo imprint, which means that DC is the publisher, or, you know, but Vertigo is the imprint they're using, and Vertigo pretty much were more mature comics.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some themes, and, you know, they're very liberal with their use of profanity and their adult themes. It's nothing to see, you know, somebody having sex. It might get real deep into, like, the occult, you know, a lot of blood, guts, just a more mature audiences, so to speak. You wouldn't give this to an 8 or 9 year old and have them read some of this stuff, okay? This was I had read a write up on this, and I was like, this was very interesting. English was something that I was really not so much into until 11th and 12th grade. You know, I just had some great teachers, and when it came to reading some plays and stuff like that, I'm a reader anyway. Outside of comics, I love to read. And
you're a reader, not a leader.
Yeah, that too. I'm pretty much both. but
no, that's a joke from.
I know. This was pretty much the story of Romeo and Juliet. Well, not really Romeo, but Tybalt, who was the cousin of Juliet. And it's set in the hood. All the characters are either black, white, or Puerto Rican. It's still they're still using swords. It's written, if you ever saw that Romeo and Juliet movie, where they're talking, and I think they did it with Hamlet too, where they're still talking, you know, in that Shakespearean language, but it's still set in a more modern setting. This was awesome. This was fucking great. Like, I read this more than once. It was just so good. It's written in a way where it's not written verbatim word for word like the Romeo and Juliet movie was with Leonardo DiCaprio, but it was written in that Elizabethan Shakespearean language, and it was the artwork was good, the colors were great. It reminds me of Hawkeye, the way they would use those tones. You know how Hawkeye sticks to, like, purples and sometimes pinks and stuff like that. And just a real simple, clean cut line, real simple artwork, nothing too complex. And it was just really, really, really good. I mean, it was part of me coming back into really getting deeper into these indie comics. And also taking a different perspective of the story. From the story we read, it was just Romeo and Juliet, you know, as a protagonist, and Tybalt was he was always someone who just was, you know, if you wanted to look from his point of view, he was it seemed like a troublemaker. He didn't mind his damn business, but you looked at it from a whole different view. And the way they have it set up here, it's set in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just read the back of it. It says, "And Brooklyn Babble, where we lay our scene. It says, forbidden love, sword stroke violence, and heated tongues, all beneath the clanging of subway trains, like an underground mixtape. Prince of Cats is Ron Wimberly's take on the literature's most timeless tale, William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Blood soaks the streets of this violent New York borough, as Tybalt, the Prince of Cats, and his Capulet crew wage battle nightly with the hated Montagues. The two warring clans fight their way through high school, swords clashing between barbed insults as they hurl towards an inescapable showdown. Ron Wimberly's Prince of Cats remixes urban melodrama, samurai action, and classic theater in a Brooklyn fueled by cheap takeout and neon spray paint. Yeah, so, you know, go out and check it out. I paid, it was $16.99. I think I didn't know about that website then, where I get my trades half off. So I think that I got it for, I think I got it on Amazon, maybe. And Amazon, you can get a discount, but not as much as my source. All right, moving on to the next one. Let's go to a single issue. Oni Press released the issue called a comic called Letter 44. This doesn't use George Bush and Barack Obama directly. They have these characters, the president and president-elect in this book, have different names. But you can tell us who they're talking about. I mean, Letter 44, they're talking about the 44th president. And the way it's set up is this president in this story, he just won the election. Mm-hmm. And he had already made all these promises and plans of what he was going to do when he got in office, because the last president had sent the country to war, and everything that really happened from 2001 into from Bush's administration up through Barack Obama's is mirrored in here. So everyone wanted change, and this new president is coming in. He's like, you know what? I'm going to make change. We're going to do some stuff. And, you know, his name's Steven. I can't remember his last name, but this new president-elect, his name is Steven. And he's like, you know, I'm ready to get in here and really make some change. And the day of him being sworn in as, you know, his inauguration, he goes to the White House and he sees a letter that just has folded and it says number 44 on it. Mm-hmm. In the Oval Office, and he goes in, he sits down, he reads it, and the president going out, the sit and duck president, President Carroll, who is like in Bush's character, he pretty much says, look, you know, I know that you don't like me, I know you don't agree with the decisions I made during my administration, but there's a reason why I did what I did, and I'm about to let you know now. You're about to find out what you're about to inherit. You're about to find out that looking on the outside in, you know, things are a lot different than being in this role. And I'm so glad that I don't have to deal with it anymore. It's yours now. And he pretty much tells them that they found out that there were aliens. There was life, you know, out in the galaxy, and they were building a weapon that was targeted towards Earth. And the reason why the government had, the reason why the president had pushed and pushed and pushed for this war, for the weapons of mass destruction and all that, he knew it was never weapons of mass destruction, but he had to do it because he had to have a reason to get the defenses, get the military defenses up, to get more weapons, to get more soldiers. He had to have an excuse. So he had to create that war so that he could get weapons and get more people into the military and all this, that, and the other. And this president's like, I don't believe this is true. Nah, you just saying that, you know, on the way out, this is all bullshit. So he goes in, he gets inaugurated, you know, but the whole time he's thinking about this. So, you know, he's asking these people in his administration that he kept from the previous administration, you know, what do you know about this? Some don't know anything, some know a lot. So he finds out there was a crew of nine people that were sent out in space, and they've been out there for, like, I think 3 years maybe. They've been investigating and trying to find out what's going on. And you know, that's pretty much the first issue right there. You know, it's not too much. The first issue was $1. From Oni Press, they're the publisher. It was just a really great book. It makes me want to get the second issue. Charles Soule, mm-hmm. I'm not sure if Charles Soule's writing anything for Marvel. He's writing everything in DC. He wrote this issue. The artwork's good. The story's good. Like I said, $1. Great story. Great take on what was going on. A different spin and looking at it. If anything, you can pick up this issue for $1. If you don't like it, I mean, what's $1? You spend it on a candy bar. So I would personally give this issue 4.5 out of 5. I think it was a good read.
Okay.
The next one I wanted to talk about was, let's just go right to it. I'll just go to my pick of the week. Actually, this book came out a couple of weeks ago. It's Afterlife with Archie. Everyone's seen the Archie.
Wait. Stop the presses. Aren't you? Shouldn't you have grown out, Archie, by now? Explain yourself.
I got. That's the thing. I mean, look. Okay. Afterlife with Archie was advertised as Archie and versus zombies. And I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. They just released this for Halloween. This is
everywhere. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm like, this is. I know zombies everywhere. This is for Halloween.
No, Archie's everywhere. I'm not talking about zombies. I mean, Archie took on the Punisher. So
yeah he is literally. So you know, I'm like, okay, you know, when this issue comes out, I'll get it. And plus, my local comic shop, they did a exclusive they had a some comic shops will team up with the publisher, and if they order a certain amount of copies or they have some type of agreement, they'll get a special cover that has something to do with that comic shop. So mine had one of the Archie characters as a zombie walking into my comic shop on the cover. That was the special cover. So I was like, you know, I'll go ahead and buy this issue. I was kind of looking forward to it anyway. We've all seen these Archie comics. If anyone has read any type of comic besides the funnies in the paper, or maybe not even picked up a superhero comic, you've seen these Archie digests in the supermarket. You've seen them everywhere, those little thick books. Everyone's read, who's a comic fan, it's more than likely read an Archie comic or Archie's digest. Surfer, I know you've read one, right?
Yeah, when I was five, but...
I'm pretty sure you've seen one after five. But anyway, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to get this book. So yeah, when I go in there...
I read when Archie turned black. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
You stupid. It could be coming. But we got Josie and the Pussycats. They all, that's all they're going to give us.
That's Josie. Another reason I don't like Archie. Because I saw a cover where Archie was making out with one of the Pussycats. And I'm like,
give me the... Show me. You got to link it to me. I want to see it. So what happened was, I go in there, and in the comic shops, most comic shops will have their children's comics separated from everything else. So they have like Archie, Sonic the Hedgehog, Mega Man, a lot of those Cartoon Network themed comics will have or Nickelodeon themed comics will have their own section. So I went over there and looked, and I was like, I know I looked on the website and it said it was coming out today. So I asked the manager, and he told me, oh yeah, it's over here, and it was over with the regular indie comics. I'm like, okay, whatever. I got home and read this book. This was not the Archie that we grew up on, we were used to. This was a serious ass book. All right, it starts off with Jughead coming with Hot Dog, which is his dog. He's bringing it to Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which in my mind I kind of forgot. Oh damn, that's right, she was in the Archie universe. He comes to her door, and he has Hot Dog wrapped up in a blanket. You can see he's bleeding. Hot Dog's been hit by a car. And he's like, you got to bring him back. You got to bring him back. You got to bring him back. And she's like, I don't know. I'm not supposed to do that. I'm not supposed to be, you know, a necromancy and all that stuff. Her aunt's here. What's going on? And like, what's going on? They like, you better not. You better not. You know, we don't do that. If you do that, you're going to be in trouble. We'll try to save the dog, but that's it. You know what I'm saying? See what we can do. Finally, they work on him. They like, Hot Dog is too far gone. Sorry, it's nothing we can do. Jughead goes with Hot Dog home, and he's crushed. He's upset. He's crying. His dog is dead, right? Sabrina feels bad. She grabs one of her witchcraft books. She heads over to his house and like, look, we're going to go do this. Bring him to the cemetery. We're going to take care of this. She gets him over there, and she brings Hot Dog back. But Hot Dog comes back. He's a zombie now. He was dead. He comes back to life, but, you know. He hauls off and bites Jughead. This motherfucker is hanging out at the bottom, underneath the house, underneath the porch. Mm-hmm. And Jughead is trying to, you know, figure out what's going on. He's just happy. Hot Dog bit him. So Jughead got a fever. He in bed. This is around the time of the dance. They got a dance going on like they always do in the Archie comic. Betty and Veronica, they trying to figure out who going to go with Archie to the dance. Betty want to go as a slutty nurse. Veronica... Betty want to go as Nurse Betty, a little slutty nurse. Veronica, like, she can go as Vampirella or something like that. And Archie, like, what's going on with Jughead? So he go to check him out, and he's like, Jughead, what's wrong? You look terrible. He's like, I can stay with you, man. If you want me to stay, I won't go to the prom. And I'm like, at this point, I'm like, they want some other shit, because anywhere in the world, you got two pieces of ass waiting for you at this prom, but you want to hang out with your homeboy in his room or at a dance. But anyway, so Jughead's like, nah, just go ahead, check on Hot Dog. No, he's like, where's Hot Dog? You know, what's going on with Hot Dog? And he's like, Hot Dog seemed kind of weird when I was coming in. And Jughead's like, stay away from him. Stay away from Hot Dog. So Hot Dog, when he goes to tell Archie to stay away, he saw that Jughead's arms all swelled up. It's like he got, like, some type of rabies or something. Long story short, Archie goes off to the dance. Jughead's upstairs, and this motherfucker dies and turns into a zombie. So when he comes downstairs, the parents sitting there, he eat them motherfuckers. He leaves out. He making his way toward the school. How the hell, why he knew to still go there? Maybe that was left in his conscience. He making his way. He see Mr. Weatherby and Miss Grundy sitting on a bench outside. They supposed to be chaperoning, but they sitting outside talking on the bench. Mm-hmm. And he just haul off and bite the hell out of Mr. Weatherby and kill his ass. So next thing you know, he comes inside. It was a Halloween costume party. He comes to the Halloween costume party, and they like, damn, look at your costume. That looked tight. And they don't realize that he's straight up zombie. So that was the end of the first issue. Definitely going to pick up the second issue. That was my pick because they made me read a fucking Archie comic book. And the story was good. It wasn't, you know, this is a time, and you know this, sir, for everybody and their mother is trying to capitalize off The Walking Dead. They're coming out with zombie everything. This is one of those stories where they did it in a way where it was, you know, it was, you don't think about Walking Dead reading this. You know, Walking Dead is more than about zombies to me. It's more about survival. This right here was straight up, this shit is on. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they stuck inside this gym, mm-hmm. and this motherfucker walked up in there, and he about to eat some brains up in there. So I'm waiting for the second issue to come out. If you haven't read it, that's my pick. Afterlife of Archie. It's a great story around this time of year, Halloween. Pick that book up. You won't be disappointed with number one. It's a limited edition. It's only going to be 8 issues. So they're definitely probably going to release it in trade. So, you know what I'm saying? I mean, if it's something you want as a, you know, you could always find that in a trade paperback. But you don't know when it's going to be released. Mm-hmm. But I would tell you, check out these single issues. I'm going to get them in the floppies. I'm going to get every issue that comes out. Unless the story starts tanking in the middle, I don't see it happening, but, you know, I'm looking forward to it. So check it out. Have you seen it? I don't know if you picked it up. Have you read it? Have you seen it?
No, I can't say that I have, but
when you get to the store, you know, see if you can check it out. I think you'll like it. Let's see what else we got. We got Peter Panzerfaust. I read the first, this is one of those Image Comics. I read the dollar issue. I'm not gonna spend too much time on this because this book ran by pretty quick. I wasn't even gonna pick it up because I was like, I don't wanna read shit about World War II. I don't mind a Peter Pan story, but I don't shit about World War II. It's been pretty much the story of Peter Pan depicted during World War II. And I got it because it was a dollar. If they did not have this dollar issue, I would have never picked it up, but mm-hmm. I would have missed out on what looks to be a great story. After reading this, I was able to secure the trade paperback because the first issue moved along pretty well. This takes place in Germany. Peter Pan comes over. He's an American. The Lost Boys are there's nothing like him flying or any of that.
Peter Pan, he's evil in Once Upon a Time, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, they just call him Peter in this. They don't call him Peter Pan. But the other, you know, people, they have their names. So it's loosely based on it, but it's definitely set during that time, World War II. Peter Pan's running around with guns. He's throwing grenades. He's doing all this shit, and they did a good job of keeping the story flowing. It was one of those books where you read it and you're like, damn, that was over pretty quick, but the story was good. You know, where's the next one? I want more. So the first two trades are out. I got the first one. I'm gonna read that first, and when that's done, I'll go ahead and tackle that one. Mm-hmm. All right. Real quick, The Strange Talent of Luther Strode. I wanted to touch on this book right here because I read this, and this book is just full of so much, I don't know what the hell to say. Oh my gosh. This is written by Justin Jordan, who had a run in Valiant Comics Shadow Man, which I didn't care too much for. He's currently also writing Green Lantern New Guardians, which he's doing a decent job with. But he's one of those people that when you let him write his own shit, when he's not writing licensed properties, he really can fully express himself. He has a warped sense of thinking. But this was something amazing. I didn't read the second trade yet. I did order it. I have it upstairs. I'm going to start it after I finish reading some other stuff. But this is The Strange Town of Luther Strode. It collects issues 1-6. It's about Luther Strode, who's this puny, Screech Powers-looking dude. He's a nerd in school. He gets bullied. He likes this emo girl. You know, she likes him too. She's Russian. She's like a Russian emo. He sends away for this Hercules kit, which Surfer probably remembers, like those Charles Atlas kits. that mm-hmm. you can send away for. He sends away for one of them. The book comes. He reads it, you know, starts meditating, reading it, doing the exercises in there. Motherfucker wakes up the next day, and he's, I mean, cock diesel. He built. He got a huge appetite. He's strong as shit. His reflexes off the hook. Come to find out, him and his mother are on the run. He's come from an abusive. His father was very abusive towards him and his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And his father just got out of jail, and they're hiding. And the mother's like always nervous. Somebody come knock on the door. She's like, "Oh shit, it's him." And he not only was he concerned with protecting himself from the bullies, he really wants to be able to protect his mother from his abusive father. So as the story unfolds, not only is he, you know, is he able to defend himself, but he kind of like remember, I don't know if you read Crisis of Infinite Earths.
Some of the original one, or
no, Infinite Crisis, the second one. That's what I'm saying. Infinite Crisis.
Well, actually, that's the third one. I think Identity Crisis.
No, Final Crisis, the third one. Infinite Crisis, the second one.
No, you got Identity Crisis belong in that series.
No, but I'm talking about Identity Crisis does, but Identity Crisis is something that I'm talking about.
I know.
If I had it my way, I wouldn't even count Final Crisis. I would count Crisis Infinite Earth, Identity Crisis, and Final and Infinite Crisis. I didn't care for Grant Morrison's Final Crisis, but that's just me. I didn't care for it. It was just blood to me. I agree. Infinite Crisis was a amazing story to me. I liked Infinite Crisis and Identity Crisis, and I liked the first one, but that last one I just couldn't get with. But there, I said all that to say that there was a scene in there where Superboy Prime was they were all trying to stop him, and he didn't mean to do it, or at least he didn't think he did, but he just started killing people.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how they had like a list of like B characters and like Wildebeest and all them? He just started ripping their arms up, like he just couldn't control his strength. Well, that's how Luther Strode is. Like, this motherfucker, the bully went to go try to throw the ball at him like real hard and dodgeball, and Luther caught it, and he threw that shit back so hard that he broke the dude's nose. And then like, he just don't know his own strength. Like, there's, you know what this is like? This is like Kick-Ass done right. That's mm-hmm. exactly what this is. Legend, the Strange Tale talent of Luther Strode is Kick-Ass done right. Okay? Kick-Ass to me was more Hit Girl the damn hero in that. Kick-Ass a pussy. This right here is Kick-Ass done right. You will not be disappointed. There's a lot of blood, a lot of gore. There's a lot of crazy ways of people getting killed in this shit. I'm talking about, like, he'll kick somebody so hard in between their legs that, like, their guts will come out their mouth. And it's real graphic. It's real, real graphic. But the story was good. It's got a lot of action in it. It's just a lot of killing. There's, like, major characters that just straight up, they're going to die. I mean, there's, you would turn the page and be like, oh, damn, they died. I mean, this dude life sucks. Once he got these powers, if he thought that his life sucked before getting bullied at school and being on the run, you talk about with great power come great responsibility. This dude's life took a complete turn for the worse once he got these powers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a complete turn for the worse. I mean, it's just like, oh shit. I mean, he did get the girl, but shit just hit the fan. And he pretty much, I mean, you can shoot him with bullets, stab him, whatever. He just kind of regenerate. He don't die. He got super strength. He's fast as hell. He's hit, but this is some shit. I read this first trade paperback. 5 out of 5 for me. I'm just into this kind of thing. If you type person, you got a weak stomach from any type of blood and guts, whether it be in print or, you know, on film or whatever, then maybe you want to skip it. But shit, I liked it. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to the next one. I want to go to a classic. I told myself I wanted, when I do this, I want to do this is the last one we're going to do. I want to do a classic trade that I did. It was easier for me to do this in trade form because I don't have all the single issues in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
I chose to do Icon from Milestone Comics.
Oh yeah, Icon.
Yeah, there were two people who, when they passed away, it kind of had me stop. Michael Turner was one. But when Dwayne McDuffie died, that hit me hard. Like, that really, when I found out I was like, oh my God. What Dwayne McDuffie did, his influence on comics, his outspokenness,
comics and TV shows, TV and movies.
This man, being a man of color, staying with the big two, working with, I remember, one of the first Dwayne McDuffie comics I read, I didn't even know about him then. I was so young, was Damage Control.
Mm-hmm.
And, that book was pretty much about, you hear about, you see these characters and they're fighting some type of threat, and no one ever thought about, like, who cleans up all the mess of, when these buildings get destroyed and, all the civilians around who get hurt and all this stuff. And Damage Control was about that. And this man, I'm convinced, could write about anything and get you to watch it, get you to read it. He was responsible for just really, in my opinion, just really giving Jon Stewart, taking Jon Stewart for so long, in my eyes, had been plagued with, he destroyed a planet, he did this, that, and the other, but he really made Jon Stewart someone, a lot of people's favorite Green Lantern. I never connected with Hal Jordan. I never connected with the pilot. Not saying anything's wrong with it, but I never connected with him as a character in that sense. I've connected with Kyle. I never cared for Guy Gardner, even though he's supposed to be from Baltimore. He's an ex-cop. I never really cared. I didn't like his hair. I don't like his hair. But Jon Stewart was one who, if you watch Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, he did. That was Dwayne McDuffie. And it's stuff that he wanted to do with Justice League of America, and I think that he got a little too popular, and I don't think that Dan DiDio liked him. And I just have my opinion on that. Some people might disagree, but and they pulled him off of there. But Dwayne McDuffie, what he did for me that was really important was, back in the 90s, I remember walking to the comic shop, it was 1993, and I saw a comic called Hardware, and it stood out because it was a black guy and he was dressed up, he had like all his stuff on, and it was just like the artwork just stood out, and I picked it up, and they had a bad version, they had a regular version, and I for some reason grabbed both. And as soon as I got home, that was one of the first books I read, and I just liked it. And Icon came out. From that, we got Static. When he first came out, he was just Static. He wasn't Static Shot. He was Static. We got a comic that I wish they would re-release, which was Blood Syndicate. And we got a group, a lot of other comics from it. Milestone was an imprint of DC Comics, which means they pretty much, Milestone, the creators, they own these characters. They could do what they wanted with them. But they had an agreement with DC that they were the publisher. And it was a group of guys, pretty much African-American men, who they didn't just write African-American characters. They wrote women characters. They wrote Latino characters. They wrote, characters from the ghetto. They wrote characters that you wouldn't even expect. Like, Icon was kind of like Superman. He was an alien from another planet. When he came down, he came down like 1800s. The first person he saw was a slave. The lady outside of his ship he saw was a slave. So he took on the form of a black baby boy. His name is Augustus Freeman, and every time he would go through, life, he was Augustus Freeman. Then he would have to go away for a while and come back as Augustus Freeman Jr. or Augustus Freeman III. At this point in time, he's Augustus Freeman IV, I believe. But anyway, he's pretty much got all of Superman's powers, you could say. Indestructible. He can fly. He doesn't have like the heat vision and the breath and all that stuff, but the thing about him was that he's a school teacher, he's a conservative, he's a Republican, and he just
I don't think he would be today, but continue.
Oh no, not today, but even then, 20 years ago, back in 93, it was still, he taught at a school in the ghetto, but he just didn't want to believe certain things. And the thing was, like, he showed up, the police were, there was someone, there was a villain that had a group of people, the mayor hostage, I believe. He shows up with his sidekick, and the police turn around and pull a gun on him. And, they pretty much just, maybe you did it. You just assume he did it because he was black. And he's like, wait a minute. And Rocket's like, I told you this was going to happen. That's the sidekick, Rocket. And he's like, no, that's not going to be what, you know, that's not going to be, you know, how it happens. But it was. Rocket, his sidekick, she was a teenager. I think she's like 15. She ended up pregnant, so they dealt with teen pregnancy. It just dealt with a lot of issues. It was an intelligent comic. When Luke Cage came out, anyone who reads comics, Luke Cage, when he first came out, he wasn't like he is today. It was more like a blaxploitation type character.
No, that was only... Well, anyway, I won't get into that. Anyway,
sorry. There was a season where he was. Well, Dwayne McDuffie wrote an issue of Icon where they had a character in there who was a parody of Luke Cage during that period. And it was just a good book. Like Valiant Comics, they had tight continuity. It would be nothing to see Static come on over or the Blood Syndicate come over. This right here covers, I believe, the first 8 issues. I got it when my comic shop had a sale, 50% off, so I think I got it for like $10, and it's originally 20. I wish they would release a lot more. They only released like, you know, a couple of issues of, like, the first 8 issues of Hardware, Icon, Static, and they didn't release Blood Syndicate at all. They had did a crossover with these characters. It was set in the universe for the Milestone characters was set in the fictional city called Dakota, where it was this big bang. And what they did was the police tried to gas these gangs out. They used this gas to try to get rid of the gangs, and the gas ended up mutating some of these people, giving some people powers. Some of them would just straight up turn to mutants, kind of like in the vein of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And you had some people whose lives were affected in such a way where their lives were ruined. Some people just received power. Some people just simply dropped dead. If you ever watched the Static Shock cartoon, they touched on it somewhat in that cartoon, which was a very good cartoon, by the way. I enjoy Static Shock.
Oh, yeah.
And they tried to release Static Shock and a couple of other characters they had brought back when they did the DC New 52. Zombie was one. Static Shock was another one. Yeah, I think
they should have did Static Shock close to the cartoon than anything else. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's a lot of people who kind of upset about that. Don't get me wrong. There's some people who just believe that, you know, because it's a black comic, it got canceled. I didn't personally read it myself because I didn't read the New 52 when it first launched in 2011. I got some of the stuff in trade back in 2012 when I started picking up some of their stuff. So I didn't read it. But a lot of people said it wasn't that good. The complaint was that Mrs. Terrific and a lot of other of the Nardi characters weren't given a fair shake. Like, they were just getting any type of creators thrown on there. The editors weren't letting the creators do what they wanted to do. I don't know about all that. It could be true. Maybe it's not. But I will say this. There's no doubt in my mind that when DC came out with these 52 comics to launch this New 52, they knew good and well that they were going to end up canceling a lot of those books. I mean, that's just the way I felt. I think a lot of people, for some reason, thought that every title that got released was just going to stay forever. And that just wasn't going to happen. I mean...
Well, Batwing's still around.
Batwing is... Okay, when Batwing first started out, I wasn't too interested in Batwing because I was like, okay, this is a version of a Batman in Africa. You know, he's not Bruce Wayne. He doesn't have, like, everything Bruce Wayne has, but he's been given... He's given resources and stuff by Batman to be able to fight crime in Africa. Now, I that wasn't something I was interested in reading initially. In issue 19, issue 19, that Batwing, I think his name is David something, he said, look, I want to fight crime the way I want to fight it. I can't do it as restrained as Batwing, because in order to use Batman's tech and fight under that whole symbol of Batman, you gotta follow a code. And, you know, that dude was like, you know, I don't want to be restrained like that. I got to do it my way. This is more serious than that. So they changed the setting. They got Luke Fox doing it, who is a character that I just completely just, oh my gosh, I love this comic. I really, really like the way they make Luke Fox. He's like, he's smart. I mean, you know what I'm saying? He comes from a rich family. He's very, very educated, but he's not like Carlton Banks type character. He has a sense of humor. He's in shape. he can do things on his own. He's very independent. He's learning from his mistakes. The presence of Batman that they have in the book is minimal. I mean, he's in there, but you know, it's just been a great book. I'm really, really, really enjoying Batwing. Batwing, his costume, his armor kind of looks like Batman Beyond to me. But I'm liking that book. I don't know if you're reading it, but I'm really liking it. I think Jimmy Palmiotti and somebody else is writing it. They're writing All-Star Western, but they're writing that book. And I really, really enjoy this book. I think in the last issue I read, the one girl, his girlfriend, he ended up breaking with his girlfriend in a previous issue. And then in this issue, you know, his girlfriend comes over, and I think her father got sick or her father passed away. His father passed away. And she came over, and she pretty much just wanted to screw. So he's like, all right, I'll go with it. They slammed the door, and he fucked her. And then in the morning he woke up, she was gone. You know, but it's just a real down-to-earth type comic, and I really, really like it. And that's one of those comics that I'm going to read on a monthly basis because I don't want to wait for the trade to come out. You know, I'm going to continue to read Batwing as long as they keep doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Kind of like I haven't really read Ultimate Spider-Man. But I know when Ultimate Spider-Man first started, they wanted to lynch Miles, and they was hating on that and this, that, and the other.
Not the majority of people. They weren't hating. The majority of people weren't hating it. Only people that, most of the people that probably didn't read and just heard about it.
That's what I'm saying. They didn't know. They thought it was 616. A lot of them didn't even know it was Ultimate.
Wouldn't matter. That shouldn't matter. But anyway.
It shouldn't matter at all, but you know, I mean, unfortunately, that's what it was. I mean, if you look at the comments, you know, it's like, what's wrong? They made Spider-Man the wrong color. And people like, you know, this is the Ultimate Universe, blah blah blah. And they were like, first Nick Fury, now Spider-Man, and blah. Now, did they even think about doing something to Miles? Everybody arrived. It seemed like, I mean, they had fallen in love with that character. I wanted to go back and get that run and actually read it, but that's a different story for a different day. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this Icon, I rate this a 5 out of 5. Part of it is because, you know, reading this material still stands the test of time. You know, it's a great, great storytelling. The artwork's good. And I will be honest, part of it is because I can read this book and instantly mentally go right back to 1993. It takes me back. And it's not one of those things. You ever watch a movie and you liked it when you were a child, and then you end up watching it again when you get older, and you're like, what did I see in this? It's some cheesy shit. Not with this. This right here was great, and it's a testament to how great of a writer Dwayne McDuffie was, and he is greatly, greatly, greatly missed.
Yes. I met him in person. He's a super nice. He was a super nice guy. Real tall, but
intelligent. He knew his shit. I mean, anybody, I would ask you to go on YouTube. You can see some interviews and stuff. He had vision. He had an idea on how he wanted to do things. And it was just, during that time, to come out with, to do what they did with Milestone during that time, it's just amazing. And Milestone released over 300 some comics. I mean, they were in business for a while. They really, you know, did some. Milestone wasn't, you know, I mean, people knew who Milestone was. I just think that people just want to have an opinion about Milestone and say, oh, it was just, you know, black people's comics. Milestone had no problem, you know, saying the N-word in there. I mean, because it was, I remember that scenario I was telling you about when they were going to go up to the police to try to assist them in stopping the criminal. Rock is like, they just think that, you know, they just going to look at us like a bunch of, you know, N-words, you know what? And Icon's like, wait a minute, no, we're not talking like that. Watch him out. You know, so, and they wrote it in the comic. It wasn't even like, sometimes in comics, they'll use like dollar signs and, you know, ampersands and all that stuff in replace of cuss word. No, they spelled it out. N-I-G-G-E-R. So, you know, I mean, it was just real. It was real. And it was just great. So, you know, that's where I'm at as far as indie comics. I will say that I did order, I placed the order for Invincible Compendium, volumes 1 and 2, which will give me the first 96 issues between those two. And I was able to get, what is it called? Volume 18, which gives me issues 97 through 102, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I got, so that's probably, I got a, 102 comics for about $70. because those compendiums are usually $65, but I was able to get them for 47% off. So I'm excited about that, jumping to that. I like just sitting down on the couch, especially around this time of year, putting the heat on, balling up, and just cracking it open and just start reading. So, you know, I'm looking forward to having a day off where it's quiet and I can just do that. I'm so looking forward to it. I keep checking the tracking to see when the book's coming in, because I'm waiting. I'm waiting to get to some Invincible. So that's pretty much it. I think we covered a lot, Surfer.
Yeah. Really, we got through a lot. We did had a nice little conversation there, and you know, you're here to educate me on the stuff I don't read, and you know, I'll be a lot wiser.
When you get to the comic shop, check out the dollar rack and just pull some stuff off. That's what I did.
Okay. I do. It's, you know, sometimes I don't have time to go through back issues, but once in a while I do. Real quick before we go, news came that Walking Dead is renewed for a fifth season. So,
and also on top of that, you mentioned on your show when I was on, if you could touch on that real quick, are they still got that spinoff
plan? Oh yeah, but that's happening.
Okay.
But you know, like they made an announcement, yeah, fifth season. Well, we're in the fourth. Kind of thought it would, you know, kind of forget that they have to renew, and so. Anyway.
Yeah, I think Walking Dead at this point, unless they really, really lose steam, I think they're going to be around as long as they want to be around. I don't want them to. I think that the shelf life of something like this, as long as they can come up with some creative stuff, like what they got going on right now, with the spoiler alert in 3, 2, well, what they had going on with that whole thing with the you're caught up, right? Are you current on episodes?
Yeah.
Okay, what they had going on with the flu.
I kind of didn't watch Sundays. I saw bits and pieces of it.
You saw the one with the flu then, right?
Yeah, I know there's a flu going around and people are dropping dead.
I thought that was a good idea because that's something that you really didn't.
Well, you know, they live in a world where it's not many people, and then slightest little thing. It's just making it worse, you know.
Exactly. I mean, this is things like someone could catch pneumonia. So, you know, they don't have the resources. I mean, a lot of people got to remember they
can't go to the hospital, can't go to the drugstore.
There's no one running gas and electric. There's no, you know, as far as like telephones and nothing. All that stuff is, as far as they know, I mean, everything is off. And that's as far as we know. We don't know. It could be a certain part of the country where. I mean, over there over in the East Coast, over in California somewhere, there could be an army base that has everything. Electricity's on, phones on. I mean, who knows what's going on? But, you know, the show's doing good. You know, I have not seen Sunday's episode. So, you know, I'm going to go ahead and, wow, I did not see that, Surfer. You sent me two and I didn't see them. I'm so sorry. Okay. Well, anyway, let's go ahead and wrap this issue up of Epic. Again, your resource for indie comics and popular culture. I'm Lee.
I'm Surfer. I'm the sidekick for this show, but I know when to fall back and when not to. So.
Oh, and also real quick, Tuesday nights, check out The Rant, the Mothership episode on Rant EM Radio. Also check out The Call-In Show on Saturday nights with William Morgan and a plethora of guests. At 11 p.m. every Saturday night on Rant EM Radio. And check out Surfer and his What Are You Reading comic show that will be 6 p.m. on Sundays. If there's a pay-per-view that is on that Sunday, he'll usually start at 5 p.m. to accommodate for 5:30. That. Well, 5:30 to accommodate for that. I want to thank you guys for joining us, and I hope you have a great day. Papers.